Welcome to the Fierce Female Network. I am your host. This is Fierce Manson, and today is February 22nd. It is 6:03 p.m. on the Central Standard Time Zone, and it is 7:03 p.m. on the Eastern Standard Time Zone. And we are going to have a great time on today. We're going to talk to some fabulous, fabulous, fabulous guests on this evening. I have with me on today Miss Mona Marshall. And also joining me on today is Palm Hawks. Yes, 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 Jory Grayson. So we're going to have a great time on today. I'm going to dive right in and say hello to my guest on today. Hello, Miss Marshall. How are you?
I am fantastic. How about yourself?
I am wonderful. I'm so glad to have you here with me on today.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It is a pleasure. You know, and I've read your bio, and I tell you, you are a woman of many, many talents and many, many voices.
That I am. Very
you know,
blessed.
And I'm yes, you are. And I'm just going to have to jump in because I want to know all about you and how you got started. When you know, with doing voices, is it something that you wanted to do growing up? When did you know that this was going to be something that you would entertain, it being your career and your livelihood, and it seems to be a lot of fun, and it seems to be fascinating. I can't even imagine what it would be like doing that type of work. So is it something that you always wanted to do?
As a matter of fact, I didn't know what voiceover was. I I had come out here and was studying acting and basically couldn't get out to L.A. And I had been told, because I came out here to get a master's in theater, and I had been told by my teacher back at Central Missouri State, my Shakespeare professor, that LACC had a great theater department. So I went out here with my first husband, and because I couldn't basically get arrested in theater, at least a paying job in theater, I was teaching at a school called Hollywood Professional School. And one of my fifth grade students was studying with the late Dawes Butler, who was the voice of Yogi Bear and Quick Draw McGraw. And his mother kept saying, because she also knew I sang and had, you know, seen me perform at little theaters around town, she said, oh, you've got to take this class. You'd be so good in voiceover. I just know you would. And she kept nagging me and nagging me. And I finally went to the class. And it was like this brain explosion, because I thought, oh, my God, I can do anything. And I was also studying with Off the Wall at the time, doing improv, and also would guest on Brian Cummings' little workshop that he had, and realized that I could do children's voices. So, and then what Dawes did for us is he would write us copy. And so, you know, and he used to say, if you can't act in a 30-second commercial, maybe you can't really act. So the idea being that you had to, in voiceover, really grab onto that character, own it, and be able to think like that character, even if you had only a few lines. So, you know, I just kind of took to it like a duck to water, as they say. and I've been doing it ever since. So I was very fortunate. Unlike some of my friends in voiceover who knew what they wanted, I have one friend, Bob Bergen, who wanted to be Porky Pig, and by goodness, he grew up, and that is the voice he does. So, yeah, I never dreamed of this. It's been absolutely a fabulous time, and it just it reminds me how important it is to keep an open mind in life. Mm.
You know, you're absolutely right. It is interesting, and it's funny how our life and our journey can take different turns, and we really never know where we may end up. Of course, we plan. You know, me, I try to plan everything. Of course, it never turns out the way that I plan it to. It's always an interesting little turn in the path. And so it has taught me, you know, all the different hiccups and bumps in the road. Has taught me how to have a really great strategy. And so, and you know, I can't help it. My brain is always in strategy mode. It's really a good thing or bad thing. But that, it's both
well, it works for you, I guess it's a good thing, right?
Yeah, it does. It works for me. You know, and
then it's
I
a good
always,
thing.
It's almost like being in combat, like a military or a person that's always have to think a way around a situation and how to get this done. And I love
think
it.
On
yeah,
your
I really do. I love it. I do. I love it, love it, love it, love it. Kind of like a problem solver. I love to fix things and solve things. But I want to know, and I've been thinking about this all week, you know, and all last week, because I know one of the voices you do is for South Park. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, I've never really watched South Park, and I know a lot of people love South Park. I've had a lot of friends, a lot of gentlemen friends that love South Park, and they're like, oh, my gosh, Adrian, you never watched the episode of South Park? So I've seen just little mini clips, but you gotta do some voices from South Park. You just gotta.
Oh, sure. Oh, my God, Adrian, what do you mean you've never seen South Park? What is the matter with you? Does your mother know this? Oh, my God.
Adrian, you really should watch South Park, because here we've learned how to paint while we're having a nervous breakdown. Ooh.
Yeah, she's right, you know. Absolutely.
Those are three voices that I do, and whatever they throw at me. That was Kyle's mom, Mrs. Broflowski, and Butter's mom, and then the last was Little Red, who goes to school with the boys.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's a trip. You know, it's brilliantly written. It really is, and basically, it skewers hypocrisy. And if you're not walking like you're talking, honey, you're a hypocrite. You know, and we all have a little of that in us. Hopefully mm-hmm. we learn as we go. But the writing to this day is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I've said this many times on interviews. Trey and Matt, you know, they're brilliant. And how they, this really impressed me this year. You know, when COVID hit, well, last year, when COVID hit, they knew that fans were waiting for something. And one of the producers, Frank, had a big meeting with all of us. And that was what he said. You know, we've got to come up with a way to make this work. And that's exactly what they did. South Park normally, if you've seen any of the shows about how it's put together, unlike any other kind of animation, it is all done in 1 week.
Mm.
1 week. That's unheard of.
Are you kidding?
Usually, you know, I'm not kidding. No, no. And part of that was because when they started, they didn't realize that that wasn't how you did it. So that's how they did it. So picture a studio where everybody's there. And there are long hours, really long hours, not so much for the voiceover people, because what will happen is Trey will write lines for, you know, write lines for the characters. They'll go in and they'll record a rough draft so that the animators have something to work with. And then they'll call us in when it gets closer to normally a Tuesday night for a Wednesday air date. But they couldn't do that because that studio was closed down. So they came into each of our homes. And they set us up with all of their equipment so they could control it from the studio so that all the, you know, all the sound would be correct. And then I'm assuming, I don't know this for sure, normally I would go in like early, if my call time was 10 o'clock, I'd go in at 9 o'clock and I would walk around and say hi to the animators and the sync people and the background people because, you know, belonging, plus it's really fascinating to me and you know, you're talking about 65 people who are really terrific and are there for many long hours. And, you know, it was fun for me. But all that changed. I think everybody is working out of their homes. And some of those homes are not in California. And the fact that they could do the special and they're about to release another one in the next couple of weeks is a phenomenon to me, that they could do that. And that it worked. It all worked. I mean, I just recorded for them last Friday. So that made me feel good because I was taught early on that, you know, the idea is that, yes, you've been given a talent, you work on that talent, but you, for me, I'm not saying this is true of anybody else, mm-hmm. I owe something to the people that support that talent. You know, one of the things I get to do is these little cameos where people will a loved one as one of the characters that I do. And it's so wonderful to realize that you are touching somebody's life with something very special and very personal. And when I get fan letters from people saying how much either this show or a lot of times I get letters about I do a character who's a computer wizard in Digimon. This is going back to the 90s. And I remember getting one fan letter from a young lady who was high-functioning autistic. And she talked about how much that character meant to her because she could relate how she felt with a computer. And that was exactly what Izzy did. So, I mean, the idea that you can not only do what you love, but that you are also touching people, you know, and you're helping them get through something like a pandemic, even though it's a tiny little part, you know, it's a wonderful feeling to be able to do that. And you must know that because look at what you do every week. So,
every week.
Yeah.
You know, it's fascinating, and I love it. I love it. I enjoy it. And, you know, I kind of fell into it. Which you can understand
like
how you can fall into something. And I started this really as something fun to do, and it is, it's still fun. I still love it and enjoy it. And it's not work. It's just something. It's just the heartbeat of my day. And I fell into it just having, you know, it was like a little hobby, something that I did. I started out as sports. I was doing football announcements and sports announcements, and that's the way it started.
Ooh.
Way back in the day when it was WSF radio. I had a lot of fun, a lot of interviews, and it was fascinating.
Yeah.
And so then it rebranded as the Fierce Female Network, and it's taken on a whole different meaning and a whole different feeling and a whole different persona, and I just love it. It's fantastic. But I want to get back to you because you are so outstanding, and you have did so much work in so many different places. So you know I'm going to have a little fun with this because I love animation, I love cartoons, I love King of the Hill. So now, are you able to do a voice if someone says, can you do a little bit of King of the Hill? Or can you do that?
Yeah, I can if I study the voice, but honestly, I like creating my own voices. So I have, like when I teach one-to-one, I work with how to use your voice. Because I can't give anybody a guarantee that if they do X, Y, and Z, they're going to get into the business. But what I do know and what I was trained to know is how to utilize your voice, how to utilize breath. So, you know, I just like doing characters. So say if I'm teaching somebody the voice placement, one of the first voice placements is nasal. So, you know, that's when you make your air go into your nose. And from there, you can get all kinds of characters. For instance, just that sound, because it's very narrow, makes your mouth kind of small. And in your mouth being small, you can also kind of get an idea of shyness. And so you can noodle around with that and using what I call mind magic, which is putting imagery to what, you know, the voice is creating for you. You have a whole different character. Just like if voice, that nasal placement, and give it a little bit more in your voice using a wider part of your mouth, not just the nose, you've now created a much stronger character who could probably crush you like a grape. So I like doing that kind of stuff. I'm just glad
that
you
is
asked.
Fun. That's fun. That is a lot of fun.
I mean, I've done several other things to do Joan Rivers, but, you know, I prefer making my own characters.
And you do voices for video games, is that right?
Oh, yeah. One of the characters I love doing was, there's a few, Helga from Ratchet and Clank. Well, you know, she's German, and she was an exercise queen, you know. So she had got you out there to exercise. It was very important that you do this. And as I'm talking as her, I'm also thinking of those wide, expansive movements. Lift those legs. Get those arms up, because this is what is important. Video games. And I've done a lot of anime.
You know what's so funny? That particular voice reminded me of Robin Williams in Miss Doubtfire. I don't know why.
That voice did? Really?
It did.
She was more, she had more of that kind of sound.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Brace yourself, Bridget, you know, because they're coming for you. Oh, my God.
He was a trip, man. I once did an improv with him. That was scary. But he was very generous. Yeah, this is going back to when he had, I think, just finished doing Mork and Mindy. And he came back to a class that he had been in off the wall. And I was pretty brand spanking new to the advanced class. And so the premise was one of you is an expert and the other one of you has a problem. And I had just finished reading the annotated version of Sherlock Holmes. So everybody went. Robin went first, and I mean, most of the people in that class were writers, and you know, major television writers. And so here I was, this kind of lowly actor, so to speak. And so anyway, I figured, you know, I kept thinking, okay, I'm safe now. He's performed, and these other guys have performed. So finally, there's just me left. And my premise was, I am Sherlock Holmes's great, 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 great niece, and I have been living in the shadow of my great, 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 great uncle, Sherlock Holmes, until I go to a psychiatrist. So I get up on the stage, and suddenly Robin's on the stage, and I'm going, oh God, why me? You know? So, but he was great. At one point, his glasses fell, and he worked with that. He was very giving, on stage. He didn't take over. And then it was obvious that he knew a lot about Sherlock Holmes, because at the end, he did one of those things where, you know, you peel off your face, and he said, "You know who I really am." And I go, "Oh, Professor Moriarty." And that was our curtain. So that was a lot of fun. But the only time I've ever worked with him was at that time. But he left me with the impression of not only being a true genius and thinking on his feet, but that he was very generous on stage. So that was nice.
I've always been fascinated with, because he could do so many voices and do it so very well, especially on Mork and Mindy. You know, he would just...
Oh, yeah.
He was just brilliant, you know?
Yes, he was. He was very brilliant and was a loss, you know? He was a loss. You know, disease is a terrible thing. And
yes,
I can only imagine how frightening that must have been. But, there's a lot of, lost a lot of people. One of my good friends, at least in voiceover, was Russi Taylor, who was the voice of Minnie Mouse for many years, married to the voice of Mickey Mouse for many years, who died about 8 years ago, and then she passed last year, and she was wonderful. I've been very fortunate in voiceover. People, when I was starting out, were very generous to me, and I've tried to do the same with, you know, now that I'm the older person, the older veteran, helping other people as well, you know, younger people. It's important.
Absolutely.
It's like Dawes was generous with us. I mean, we paid $15 for that workshop, and that workshop was really priceless.
Wow.
Pretty special.
I do kind of want to turn a little bit to the Grinch, because you did some work on the Grinch. Which parts or voices did you play on the Grinch?
That was mostly background stuff, so that was mostly improv stuff.
Okay.
However, on Monsters University, I played the character that is showing everybody around the school, and that was fun because with DreamWorks, with that particular show, they would tell you, this is very early stages, they'd tell you what was going on, and you would just read lines as you thought the character should be. And so her lines were something like, and this is a skating school, it's so much fun, and over here we have, this is a cafeteria. I mean, she just spoke like a mile freaking a minute. It was fun, and I remember, oh my God, just doing like two paragraphs of that character, and I was sweating.
Wow.
Oh my God. Yeah. Pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, fascinating. So, what do you have on your plate coming up? What do you plan to do next? What's the next thing for you?
I have South Park, and you know, I'm auditioning all the time. But there's I also have been doing a lot of live action stuff for Netflix. Netflix has been, you know, if you notice, you can now see things in so many languages. So Netflix and some of the other streaming services are acquiring really interesting limited TV series and then dubbing it. And I love that, and I'm really good at it, and partly because I was a puppeteer for 10 years. It started with an idea I had 20 years ago, and I, for the last 5 years, one of the guys who I've known for 20-some-odd years on South Park, Mark Munley, and I, and another friend that I met at our local little eatery here where people hang out, Alex Craven and I, have been developing an adult animation series called The Adventures of Puss and Dick, A Survivor's Guide to Relationships. And it's really funny, and it's based on the idea, if you strip away all the outside stuff, you basically find that most beings will lead with either masculine or feminine energy, and we all basically want the same thing. You know, we want to be loved. We want to be respected. We want to have our sexuality at least accepted, even if people don't quite understand it. And so we've developed this the village is called Humanity Harbor, and our antagonist is a mayor who wants to basically sell off this kind of sweet little harmonious village to developers. So it deals with a lot of issues that are actually happening in the world. We also have two kind of amorphous beings, if you will. One of them is called Drek, and he is the voice of fear that each and every one of us has on our shoulders, and sometimes we listen to it and sometimes we don't. And then there is an androgynous angel called Venmar, who is, you know, both the, if you want to look at yin-yang, the yin-yang symbol, Venmar is a perfect blend of masculine and feminine energy. And the idea came out of being married, you know, for a long time to a guy I really love, but sometimes the guy drives me crazy. So it came out of the idea that if we could have more tolerance and understanding for one another, we would probably be able to communicate better. So we've been having a lot of fun doing that, and we're about to do a one-minute, what I call a slam grabber, so that we can put it out and have people look at it and see if we can get it sold. But it means a lot to me. I've been working on it a long time. And it came out of a gift I created called How to Prepare Your Love, which has a lot to do with, you know, people taking the time to spend quality time with one another. You know, when I was first starting out, I was realizing that a lot of my friends who were focused on career and having children, their marriages were beginning to deteriorate because, you know, you don't realize how important it is to spend time really talking and listening. And then fast forward to what's been going on in our country, you know, in a forever, and you see that people are split. And the thing of it is we have so much more in common. And if you can get that, if you can get how much people really have in common, that makes for better communication and better understanding so that you can actually have compassion instead of leading with fear. So even though we have some fun and ridiculous situations, and obviously these are penises and vaginas, so we're in the process of creating them. They do look more human, but they have enough of that quality so that you go, oh, okay, well, that's definitely feminine. Oh, that's definitely masculine. And we have characters where their insides do not match their outsides, because that's true in life. So I am very excited about it. I think it can be a show that is not only outrageously funny and irreverent, but can also make a difference in terms of how we view the world. Uh-huh. So that's what I've been working on.
You know, it's interesting. I have a class all about listening. And the reason why I put the class together is because I notice more and more in working with different individuals that they don't, you know, we really don't listen. We're in a really big hurry all the time to get whatever we're trying to get or whatever type of service that we're asking for. And individuals, they don't listen. They put out the question, and they don't take the time to listen for an answer. And I'm like, is the world really that caught up and so busy that, you know, we're asking all these questions, but yet we don't listen for an answer?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point, and I think it sounds like it's a much-needed class. Part of the reason why I think we have so much friction is because we're fearful of the unknown. You know, I grew up in a very middle-class area where everybody looked like me, and I didn't much care for that. I came out to L.A., and it was like, oh, my God, this is great. I remember touring with the L.A. Moving Van and Puppet Company and going to Vine Street School, where there were about 90 dialects spoken. And you looked out at the sea of multicolored faces, and it was deliciously wonderful. And I think, you know, how sad is it that so many people are locked into their own little group, and they don't realize that, wow, not only are the differences interesting and exciting to experience, but we also have so much in common, much more in common than we do not. So, yeah. And if somebody is interesting, you want to listen. And by interesting, I mean sometimes just different from what you have, you know, how you grew up, where you come from. I mean, one of the great things about living in L.A., and I'm sure New York is the same thing, is that, you know, not everybody's the same. People don't look the same. People don't talk the same. And, I mean, our one little block, I live in a little block in here, and I would say there's about 10 countries, 10 to 12 countries represented, and at least that many languages. And I love it. You know, it's exciting.
You know, and it's interesting because I've always valued different cultures, different individuals. I never liked everything all the same. I love being in the midst of a lot of different individuals, a lot of different cultures. And I think it's sad when individuals don't value the differences in other individuals. And I think it's really sad. I think that we need to be more inclusive and allowing and accepting others, you know, the differences and what we have the same. Because that's how we learn and grow. I feel that I want to learn something from you. I want to learn something from the next person. Because if we're all the same, what can we learn? And so, you know what I mean? We can't learn anything. We're not scratching when we're not growing, you know. We have to scratch our minds and scratch our acceptance, accept one another. We don't, of course, always agree with the differences, but we can learn from it and have a better understanding of
it. Yeah. Exactly.
So, I love that. And also, as an actor, you have to be able to project yourself into characters that are not like you. I mean, I love playing villainesses who are mean. Because I don't really like in real life to be mean. I got picked on a lot as a kid. I don't like that. But as a character who is part of life, that's a whole different ballgame. You know? So, yeah. It's a good life. It's a good life. Did you grow up in New York?
No, I grew up in Chicago.
Chicago? I'm a St. Louis girl. Chi-town, my buddy that I go doggy walking with every day, Xavier, she's a Chi girl.
Okay.
Chi-town,
Yes. Well, Mona, it's been a pleasure. It's really been a pleasure talking with you. It's been an interesting half hour, and I do have my next guest, so I'm on the line. I'm going to take a little break here, and then I'm going to segue and talk a little bit with Jory, and I'm going to talk about her music. And so I do want to thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to share with the listening audience on the Fierce Female Network. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, keep being fierce. Thank you for having me on.
You're more than welcome. So I'm going to have a little bit of music right now. This is Broken Hearted Blues, and then I'm going to come back and talk a little bit with Jory. So take a listen. This is Broken Hearted Blues by Mr. Dan Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
right, that was Mr. Dan Wallace on Broken Hearted Blues. And right now I'm going to say hello to my guest, Miss Jory Grayson. Hi, Jory, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you for joining me on today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Wonderful. So I love to just jump right in and get to the meat of things. And so I know that you are individual, the leading indie pop band in the United States, the Pondhawks. So I do want to learn all about the Pondhawks. I did listen to your music. It is really, really great. It is fantastic. I love it, especially the individual Stranger. I love that song. And so I want you to tell me a little bit how the group came together and how you came up with the name Pondhawks. I found it interesting, and so I wanted to learn a little bit more about how the band came up with that particular name.
Well, actually, I was doing my photography thing because that's my other life, too. I do celebrity photos. And I was at a Beatles convention because I did a book on Paul McCartney called I Saw Him Standing There. And this young man came up to me who wanted to buy one of the pictures that I had. And it wound up being Mario Novelli, who had a band. And this was like 15 years ago. And he invited me to come to his rehearsal studio to meet another person there who had done some work with Paul McCartney, Randy Reason. He's like a videographer, and he got to follow Paul McCartney backstage at one of his tours in Chicago. So as it turned out, I didn't even know this, but Mario had a band. You know, and I really didn't know much about him. And at some point, his band kind of walked in to do this rehearsal thing that they would normally do on that day. And Mario asked me, you know, you can like sit in and listen. And, you know, years ago I played in a band. It was like a long time ago. I played guitar. I sang. And it had been a long time since I'd done that because I followed my photography career. I had photos in Rolling Stone and all kinds of big magazines, Newsweek. And I still had that love for music. So as it turned out, I was sort of singing along because at that time the band was playing a lot of covers. And then Mario heard me and he said, wow. Why don't you just come over to my microphone and sing with me? And I was kind of like shyness, thinking, I don't know if I want to do that because, you know, I haven't sang in a long time. And he said, come on, come on. And I got up there and I sang with him. And the songs that we did, I knew all the harmonies too. And it was just kind of like fun, you know, to get back into that again. And when that was done, rehearsal, he asked me to actually be on stage with the band in 4 days. You know, and I said, are you crazy? Okay. But I said, okay, I'll do this. I had to rehearse everything. And I got on stage with him at that show, and that was sort of the beginning of the Pondhawks. Though we were with a different band at that time. And eventually we formed our own band. And that was like in 2007. And we started to make, you know, recordings. Mario is a very prolific songwriter. He's like gifted with so many things and melodies and he plays multiple instruments. And we just started working on a lot of songs and put out an album, The Pondhawks Have Landed, which was like 14 songs. Kind of an interesting, you know, set of music for an unknown band to put out that much material on a CD. Because, you know, most people don't listen to the whole album anyway. They like a couple of songs and that's it. So we progressed and we played concerts and opened for Davy Jones, which was a big thrill. And, you know, and it just kind of blossomed. I mean, radio stations were playing us, and we had a lot of fans. We were playing. We had one show that we would play every year for, and 8,000 people would show up. Plus, we had, like 600,000 fans on Facebook. The new song that we put out, Invisible Stranger, of course, is about the pandemic. And that was something that Mario and I were sort of working on lyrics around March of, last year, right when it came out that, you know, COVID was out there. And, you know, it was a scary thing. So we thought, wow, well, it's kind of an invisible stranger. And that became the title of the song. And we spent, you know, a long time working on it because our recording studio is basically some digital recorders that we have. And when we got these things, we didn't even know how to use it. It was just kind of like, well, it's going to be trial and error. And surprisingly, we came up with our own type of recording sound, which was a little bit different than some of the other bands. And some of our albums, you know, made the Grammy ballot. So we were really proud of that. And I just, you know, it's just fun. It's kind of sad, you know, going through this pandemic and not being able to, really perform for an audience. But we've been spending that time recording. So that's kind of the story of the Pond Hawks.
That is fascinating. That is so fascinating. And, you know, I do have a little music that I want to play. It's Midnight Howl. And I want you to, if it's okay, if you will introduce the song, tell us a little bit about it. And I'm going to play it. We're going to enjoy it. And we're going to come back and talk a little bit more.
Okay. Well, Midnight Howl is kind of about, I don't want to give you exactly what it is because when we write songs, we write about the human existence. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's like if we tell you exactly what the song is about, then you may not kind of hear that message that's more personal to you. We kind of want the song to be universal to everybody. But it's kind of like, I would say, sort of a love lost type of song. And what's interesting, at the very end, if you listen, you'll hear a coyote howl.
Hmm. Okay, well, we're going to listen for that. I've already listened to the song, of course. Now, everyone, I want you to pay close attention and listen to this wonderful song. Take a listen.
Looking for a late night crowd.
That's one of my favorites.
Wow. You know, and I wanted to ask you earlier, are you from Chicago or did you move to Chicago years ago?
No, I'm from Chicago.
Okay. Because I was looking and I noticed that some of the places that you play is really not that far. Some places that where you have performed is not that far from me in Berwyn. Experience of Fitzgerald's.
Oh yeah, we play Leiden Township's annual fireworks show.
Cannot bark. I'm right in Elmwood Park, so Berwyn, of course, is not that far from me. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, but Leiden Township is right around there too, where
yeah.
the high school is.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We play. Yeah, we play the River Grove Gazebo.
Really?
The festival, yeah. We do that like every year. Of course, now, you know. Obviously,
yeah.
Now we can't. But they have Riverfront Fest, and we're always the closer for that. They have a carnival and everything. And, yeah, we play, clubs all in the area. Yeah, definitely. You'll have to come and see us when we're playing live.
We're neighbors. My goodness. How about that?
That's great. So you're local too.
Yes, I am. Yes.
This is great. Yeah.
So when you first started out, were you always interested in music? Because I heard you say you were doing photography. And so was photography like your baby and you just kind of got into music as well? Or was it a love of both?
Well, I think when I was younger, okay, and I'm saying really young, you know, like 9 or 10 or whatever, I used to go, with my parents, we used to go visit my aunt who lived in California, okay, and I would stay at her house, and my aunt was a recording artist on Mercury Records. And she had a white grand piano in her living room.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, I was just like fascinated with the piano. I wanted to play piano. So I would sit there and doodle all day long on that piano. Eventually, that became my passion. I mean, I learned how to play guitar very well before I learned how to play keyboards. I was self-taught on that one. And with the Pond Talks, since there were so many guitarists in that band, I said, you know what, I'll play keyboards. Okay, and, you know, I was not a trained piano player. I played by ear. If I could hear it, I could play it. So I would go to the rehearsals and, you know, I would take notes and I would listen to the songs. And then I memorized everything. So when we played shows, we'd sometimes do 1.5 to 3 hours. And we had set lists and I memorized everything. And what was more challenging, I think, was when we recorded, you know, the second album, we had a song, Dreaming Over Ireland, which was something that was written long distance. I was in London and Mario was there in River Grove, and I had called him because when I was flying into London, when I woke up, I was on the plane and I pulled up the window shade and I kind of looked down to see how far we were away from England. And when I looked down, I just noticed that we had passed Ireland, okay? I could see it off in the distance. So I knew that, you know, I was getting to England. So I told him, I said, you know, I was, sleeping over Ireland, you know, like that, you know? And then he was like, wait, I think that would be a great song to write. And we were like writing long distance while I was in London. And then I came back and we wrote the song, which was about spies. Okay. Of course, you know, and just fun stuff like that. And it had a very interesting kind of synth beginning that I thought of. And it had a lot of really cool synth stuff going through it. And on stage, very challenging because I'm playing two keyboards and I'm trying to, you know, play the synth and I'm pushing buttons. And I believe that song has 17 sound changes on the keyboard when I'm playing it. But people love it. You know, we had another song everybody liked. And the first album is called Weather Girl. It's a very Beatlesque type of song because we're so into the Beatles, you know, that's our band. So the song has actually a backwards part to it, kind of like Revolver type thing. And it's kind of cool. There's just a whole bunch of stuff. And the thing was, when we were doing these songs in the beginning, we didn't know how people react. Cause you know, usually when you play a show, people are not that thrilled about hearing new songs because, you know, they want to hear the oldies or whatever. So we would kind of just ease these songs into our set and see what would happen. And people did respond really well. And I remember when we got the call to open for Davy Jones, he was at the Arcata Theater. You know, this was kind of a thing, wow, you know, indie band going to open for, you know, Davy Jones, which I don't think had ever been done before. He always had cover bands opening for him. And we were sort of told, like, yeah, just stick to the cover stuff, you know, by the promoter there. And so what we did was we just played our whole set of originals. And when we started playing, since it was our music, which from the first album, the Landed album, is so kind of 60s sounding. We fit right in with, you know, the Monkees music and stuff like that. So people were like plotting. They were like, wow, because we didn't know, you know, how are they going to react? And we did like 5 original songs. And Davey actually heard the last one when he came in, and it was called Dragonfly. And that song has a sitar on it. You know, it's kind of like George Harrison meets Wings or something to that fact. And then after that, which was kind of like a very interesting evening in itself. I mean, Davey, after the show, he would sign for every person, okay? And that theater holds like 1,000 people in there. He would sign. It didn't matter how long it was, 2 hours. He'd stand there and he'd sign for everybody. He was such a wonderful person. And he loved the Beatles. He loved the Pond Hawks. So after that show, we kind of headed down to the watering hole where everybody went after a concert at the Arcata. And we walked in there, you know, most of the band members, and we came in there, and it was very crowded. And there really was no seats left, you know, so we figured, well, we'll sort of just head over to the bar like that. And people are, like, staring at us, okay? So as we're walking over there, all of a sudden, everybody stands up and cheers and screams, "The Pond Hawks!" like that. And we were like, did they just yell out our name? You know? And they were all like applauding, and they found a table, and we sat down. They were buying us champagne. They wanted our autographs and everything. So I was like, wow, I couldn't even dream this. It was just like so exciting. And I thought, wow, they really liked us. So that really gave us more encouragement to write more original music and put more albums out. So kind of a fun local story there for you.
You know, I was listening to what you were saying, and I really grasped a hold of when you were saying you were sleeping over Ireland, and how those words and that actually what you were doing was sleeping over Ireland, how it sparked inspiration for a song. And so the reason why I mentioned that, because Some things that we do during the day can spark an inspiration. For instance, the reason why I latched on to it is because sometimes when I talk to customers or clients that have really interesting different names, it always sparks an interest, you know, because I love to write. I love to write stories. I love to write children's stories and just books and different things. And it always sparks a character in my mind when people have these really unusual names. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, your name just sounds like this character. And I'll just go blah, blah, blah all into the whole character, what they look like and what they may be doing. And they'll go like, that is really interesting, really fascinating that you could do that. But, yeah, so when you were saying Sleeping Over Ireland, how it was an inspiration for you to write a song. And so that can be just how we get some of our inspiration, by just a little glimmer of something that we're doing. And you go, aha, you know, that could really be a song or a story. It could be this or that. And it just gives us that little spark to go ahead and do something. And we never know how it's going to turn out or end up. But, you know, we get that spark to get started. And it just takes on a life.
We did change the name, though. We did change the name of the song to Dreaming Over Ireland, which was probably more appropriate than the sleeping part. But I think because I think Mario knew somebody from Ireland, and he was saying, yeah, we're just finishing the song up, you know, Sleeping Over Ireland. And he says, what, you think Irish people are sleepy? So then he said, I think we better change this, you know. And I said, well, you know, Dreaming Over Ireland is even better. So, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how kind of it, you know, and it happens a lot. You know, you'll come up with an idea for a song, and it goes through so many different phases and rewrites. I mean, the lyrics for that song, I think we probably had 10 different ones, you know, and we kept changing them and changing them until we got it right. And that's the one thing. When me and Mario work together like that, we kind of know when it's right. And the other thing is, when you're recording music, some bands, you know, they'll throw everything in the kitchen sink, whatever, because, oh, that sounds good, that sounds good. And we have a little more control over that, and we kind of think of of music is kind of like a canvas, okay? And a guitar, you know, is painted in this part of the painting. The piano's over here. And we listen and we think, oi, you know, let's put some instruments in there that maybe people don't play, you know? We have an auto harp. I mean, I have a hurdy-gurdy. One day we're going to put that one in there, the sound from the hurdy-gurdy. And we would just come up with things we had in the studio and just kind of see what sounded good. And we were very careful about sounds that would sort of interfere, you know. You have to kind of massage the music in a way so that all the instruments work together and create a sound rather than, you know, just saying, well, this sounds cool, that sounds cool, or I'll just play tambourine here or whatever. And it doesn't really work, okay, because you have to also hear the vocals, because the vocals are another instrument in the song. So it's complicated, but it seems to just come from somewhere, you know, just when we're working on stuff, and we may, you know, hit a wall once in a while, and then, you know, we may walk away and, you know, not get back to that song for a while and try a different song until these ideas come back when we hear it fresh. So, yeah, it takes us a while to put an album together or even do a single, just because we take our time and we want it to be right, because everybody says, well, why is it taking so long for this album? So, well, because we want it to be right. So, and it has to be us. We kind of have a signature sound, and we also like to do music that, you know, every song that we do. So we kind of play around with genres. So it isn't one like, well, this is a typical Pond Hawk genre. No, we'll do this. We'll do a folk song. We'll do a rock song. We'll do a psychedelic song. Just whatever we're feeling at the moment. And what's good about it is it still sounds like us. So, you know, and the Beatles, I mean, very famous bands from the 60s. You could always identify their music, you know. You could hear, like, you know, the first, you know, five notes and you knew who it was. I guess it was just something that came naturally for us with the band, and that's kind of what we strive for. And also, we're just so happy that people love our music, because we try to put a message out in our songs. It's not just, you know, songs about love, this or that, but there's some deeper meanings to the song, like Invisible Stranger is fairly deep, and you can sort of all feel the angst that we're feeling in there. And the way we did the music, we kind of did it like a soundscape type of thing, where towards the end it's sort of building up, and it's almost like a hurricane is blowing at the end, and then the ending kind of ends with hope, kind of. So, and you know, we're working on more stuff too. So we're like nonstop. So the pandemic has been a little bit rough, because obviously we all can't be in the same room together. So that makes things a little difficult.
So, Jerry, we have really ran out of time. This time has really went by so very quickly and so very fast, and it has really been an enlightening conversation with you, and I do want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule. I want everyone in the listening audience to visit the website, thepondhawks.com. I want you to go to the official webpage that they have and check it out. Check out the music. I want you to go on over there and take a look around, listen to the music. I want you to sign up, be a fan, and get one of the downloads, if you will. And that's thepondhawks.com. So please do that for me. I would really appreciate that if you do that. And so, Joy, did you have any closing remarks?
Well, I just want people to stay safe, be happy, and know that there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and we'll probably have a song for that too.
Okay, we'll be waiting for that. We will be waiting for that. All right, guys, this has been the Fierce Female Network. It has been a fabulous hour talking with Mona Marshall and Jory Grayson. And so I want you guys to come back on next Monday. There's some more fabulous guests that you're going to hear, some great interesting tips and stories. It's always something interesting on the Fierce Female Network. I have been your host. This is Fierce.
You motivated. You motivated. Winning, winning. You know they hate it.
She's
hold up.
Fierce, fierce, she's fierce, 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 she's
woo, that girl from fierce. A west side girl to a